Oh, man. No matter where you are, it's chilly. Well, not time to eat chili, but it's cold outside. But don't worry, Busted Pencils here. We're here to warm you inside, warm your hearts. You know, throw a log on the fire if you want. Give us a call. Jacob is more than happy to bring a cord of wood. Jacob, you said you were delivering cords of wood now as a side hustle.
Tim, it's called the gig economy, and it's huge right now. And I've been delivering wood to people for their fireplaces out in the brutal cold. So you can count on me. If you've got questions about education or you need wood delivered, call producer Jacob.
Producer,
there you go.
Man, speaking of it, though, hey, it's Busted Pencils. We said that it is Dr. Tim Slecker, Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, and yes, wood deliverer, gig economy, Jacob, producer. And wow, speaking of that, Jacob, it's your day today. You get to take over and invite Johnny and I on our own show because it is producer's choice. Jacob, take it away.
Chairman of the board, Jacob.
I'm very excited, guys. This is going to be a good one. It's going to be an all-timer. So, you know what? I'm not even going to add any more ado. I think we've had enough ado. Let's just get into the show.
For choo choo,
let's go.
Producer Jacob's choice, chairman of the board. Ow!
You now have two choices.
Chairman of the board, Jacob.
Ow! Jacob, chairman of the board.
I bet the board is spelled B-O-R-E-D.
We choose to go to the moon.
Life's full of tough choices, isn't it?
You chose poorly.
Welcome to the final Producer's Choice show of the month of January. I'm your host, Producer Jacob, and today we're going to look back on the first month of this year and see what trends we've noticed developing in the world of education. I have with me a handy-dandy list of four legal and policy trends to watch out for in 2026, provided by our friends at K-12 Dive, and I'm going to be revealing it with two education policy wonks, my guests, Dr. Tim Slecker and Johnny Lupinacci. Fellas, thanks for coming on your own show.
Not a problem.
Oh, yeah. Happy to be here.
Yeah, we love it, man.
So let's kick things off by looking at the first anticipated trend and seeing if we've noticed it develop in the month of January. Trend number one, uncertainty around federal support. Here's a quote from K-12 Dive. Tim, don't laugh. All right, buddy, we may or may not have seen this develop, so we'll have to wait. Here's a quote from K-12 Dive. The Trump administration's push to return education to the states, quote unquote, means that superintendents can expect less federal support and more change in 2026. This ranges from less help with administering the National Assessment of Education Progress and managing federally funded programs to unpredictability around the availability of federal funds and the makeup of the U.S. Department of Education. Education policy experts have said. I'm going to start with you, Mr. Laughs-a-Lot, Dr. Tim Slecker. Have you noticed this happening in January of 2026?
Uncertainty? Confusion? No. Jacob, that one, just look, listen, special education funding. Is the Department of Education still the Department of Education? Dear colleague letter. Oh, maybe not a dear colleague letter. How do we enforce dear colleague letters? Wow. You think, my question on this one is, will the trend continue, or potentially will school leaders say enough's enough? I mean, at some point, the business of, you know, let's just take a superintendent of, a suburban school district outside of, you know, a thriving metropolis. And at what point are they going to say, I got work to do, like real work. Like, I've got families, I've got kids that need things. I've got teachers, I've got principals. that maybe is, you know, a way that I would like to see going into February. At what point are school leaders going to say that this chaos is not manageable, but even more importantly, this chaos has been directed intentionally. And at this point, you know, pull back, lay off the chaos, and let us get back to the work of educating students, providing opportunities. Johnny's good. I can already see he's like, Tim, you think, hey, that's wishful thinking, dude.
Well, yeah, same question for you, Johnny. Have you noticed the uncertainty over federal support? And what do you think about Tim's statement that he thinks school leaders need to step up? What can they do if they should be doing something?
Yeah, Jacob, I think, look, much more of what Tim has said here. It's been clear there's not a clear message. You know, is the Department of Education dismantled? Does it exist? What is its responsibilities? Where do, you know, where the responsibilities go if it goes away or it changes? What is the specific funding decisions, et cetera, et cetera? I think Tip hits the nail on the head. You know, it's chaotic by design at this point. You know, it's intentional, you know, to sort of as a form of deregulation of something that I think should be, you know, pretty strong in any democracy is, you know, some common access to assured quality education. And that responsibility that's falling on governments. So to make, you know, the government seem like, this is happening, that's happening, it's willy-nilly, you know, it should just be privatized, seems a little too convenient for me. And I'm similar, I have a similar sentiment as Tim. I think when things are like that, you just set the compass and you go. So I'm looking for, you know, the trend to be, you know, decentralized leadership. Superintendents, school principals. So like Tim said, leaders just saying, okay, enough's enough. You know, decentralized local control. You know, if you can't make sense of what's above, then you just have to be active. You know, I don't necessarily mean like work outside of the chain of command, because there is that in terms of, you know, education is a state, right? We have our office of superintendencies state by state, and we certainly have a relationship between states and the federal government, but we're not so sure what that federal relationship looks like. So decentralized leadership, step up, say, hey, okay, we don't know necessarily what to expect from a federal level. So let's figure out what we do know. And we do know our states, we do know our local school districts. And I think that's the trend. To me, that's the optimism too, as I'm a big fan of decentralized, you know, decision making. So schools, you know, school districts, states, this is your time to shine. We'll see what the federal government does, but I mean, they're pretty busy right now doing a whole lot of things that we may or may not agree with. But what we do know about it when it comes to education is that they haven't had a clear message. The uncertainty is something we continue to notice, and hopefully enough, like Tim said, where school leaders locally, right, say enough's enough. We know what is best for kids. We'll figure it out. Maybe just leave us alone and let us do our thing.
I like that message for local activism or local responsibility or taking control of a situation, because you might look at a situation or a problem that's impacting your community and say, well, this is mostly federal. This is mostly, you know, the feds could fix this if they wanted to. But let's say 40% of it is in our control. Are we going to do half of that 40%? Or are we going to make sure we do our whole 40% of responsibility and do everything we can do here? I think that's a helpful place to be, because people get so hopeless thinking, there's just nothing we can do here. Well, try to focus on the things you can do, advocate for what you can't, but make it work. Johnny, I'm with you there. I'm going to keep it with you for the second trend of 2026. A bigger religious footprint in public education. Quote from K-12 Dive, recent years have seen a surge in First Amendment lawsuits related to the religious rights of parents and teachers, especially spurred on by the parental choice movement, circling around these issues like curriculum and LGBTQ plus culture in schools. Johnny, have you been seeing that so far in January of this year?
You know, actually, Jacob, I want to say like that it's present, but it doesn't seem to be any more increased than it's been for the last 2 years, I would say. And what I would say, and I'm referring to, I think there's, you know, I've noticed a large rise in not a populist movement, but more of a rise of Christian nationalism in terms of its like activeness and policy. And one of those areas is, you know, to be very loud and vocal on school boards, in particular with charter schools, right? And so, you know, with that trend already happening in our country, I see it continued. I don't want to say it's less present in January. There's, again, a lot going on.
Yeah.
But it certainly has, you know, I think lived up to the, you know, the momentum it had been building. And it's present and it's part of it. And I emphasize this, I think it's a minority voice that's gotten pretty loud and emboldened. And in particular with relationship to pushing boundaries of free speech and, you know, this like parental rights discourse, which sounds about right. Like parents should have rights and they do, but the parental rights discourse is a little bit of overreach that I'd say is continued trend into January, you know, through January, 2026, with this idea that like, because I'm a parent, I know best. There are certainly certain things that parents have rights to and they know about, especially with regards to the needs of their children and to those things. But there are then also experts in our districts, in our states, and in our country who speak on behalf of, say, childhood development, pediatricians, school counselors, nurses, right? Curriculum experts. I mean, I say this all the time, Jacob, like, you know, I know a little bit about cars. I drive one. I have one. I got a couple in my family. I've had a handful of them over the years, right? But I don't go into my mechanics, you know, like shop and say, you know what? I think you're doing this all wrong, buddy. Like I've watched a YouTube video on how to fix, and I know this is true in all areas of work right now. People are feeling rather emboldened and expert-like because of, you know, maybe some information AI told it online about like, here's how you fix a broken axle. But I think, you know, we have to return to trust and understand like that my mechanic is an expert on things related to my vehicles. And so I trust that to go to that expert. So I think the distrust and expertise across the board in our country is at an all-time high. And I would advocate that, like, hey, if we want to address that trend, let's recognize that people in our schools are experts. The teachers that teach our children, the principals that lead those schools, the counselors that are working on great programs to support children and the childhood development, the pediatricians in our community who are making sure not only kids, but our community stays healthy, that we trust their expertise, not blindly, right? That's the whole thing about like democracy and, you know, having science and scientific consensus. But the idea is like we establish a sense of trust in a democracy where we let experts be experts. So, Jacob, that's my long version of I see the trend continued. I don't see it particularly spiking right now. But again, all of us are pretty distracted in January by a lot of things happening, whether it's the weather or, you know, it's the political unrest of our country. You know, there's a lot of things that are a bit louder than some of these trends right now. So I'll say it's a continued momentum.
According to Johnny, he sees it happening. This prediction is for 2026 overall. So we've got 11 more months to see if this turns into a bigger thing than it has been so far. I'm wondering, Tim, how about you? What are you seeing in January? Has the religious aspect creeping into public education hit a boiling point yet, or are we going to have to wait a bit more?
You know, I don't think it has chilled or calmed down in one bit. I think the reality is what Johnny just said, is that the news that is, you know, being covered that's in front of us has, you know, taken kind of priority in front and center. And so it might potentially, no, I think it really is, gives the appearance as if the push for, you know, religion, particularly Christian and Jewish based sentiments are still hardcore and really pushing forward. We're just not seeing it in the news typically. We'll point out though that in fact, you know, it, to understand the seriousness with people who want this, recall in 2024 in Texas, there was a reading curriculum that was approved that focused on, it was a curriculum called the Blue Bonnet Curriculum, which has lots of readings from the Bible. And a lot of those readings were not necessarily literature as much as they were much more in the indoctrinating stance. And at the time that passed, the position of Texas was, hey, what are y'all getting worked up about? You don't have to use it. You can adopt it. You can reject it, or you can adapt it in any way that you want. Guess what? In 2026, now in Texas, most school districts opted for not adapting, adopting, or anything, and in fact, rejecting it. And you know what? Here goes back to Johnny. Those people in schools don't know what they're doing, because the legislature now in Texas is saying, guess what? The Blue Bonnet curriculum is not for you to decide, you silly administrators and teachers. Us legislators are going to just mandate that the Blue Bonnet curriculum occur. That's a news item, Jacob, that's happening currently right now, right? And so the fact that we're not hearing or seeing it, I would say, is just the reality of the focus on where we really see the news: Minneapolis, Venezuela, you know, the Ukraine, Iran, all of those things, right? But to think that it's slowing, I think, is just the fact that we're just not seeing it. I think the earnestness to continue to push, you know, largely a Christian perspective into public schools to mandate it is going to continue. And I think we're going to continue to see that. And if it's not pushed through the public schools, it's being elevated now in the big, beautiful bill through the school choice savings accounts that have been implemented, of which we know what is the push there. The push there is to actually drive students out of public schools. So not really trying to influence, but where does most of that money go when it's used, and where do most private school students end up going when they take the quote choice? They end up in religious schools 90% of the time. That's by design. So the push for religious indoctrination continues. And in fact, this new round that is going to be coming through the big, beautiful bill, there were 1 million students in choice. The anticipation of this new big, beautiful bill is that 1.5 million students will be using a choice option coming next year. So I think this one will continue to grow, because, you know, there is a powerful, well-funded movement to get this type of curriculum or teaching, and or some people might even say indoctrination, as part of the fabric of America. Even some people saying, you know, getting back to true American roots and being a Christian nation. So continue to watch for that.
It's a loud political minority, but you know, it is present, and it is organized in a sense that believes deeply
And you know, well funded.
And on the topic of it being a minority opinion, we're talking about Texas, Tim, where you said that most districts have chosen not to go in for this. Now, we're not talking about godless heathens down in Texas. You know,
amongst
the heavily Christian population of Texas, most people are not seeking to impose a certain way of looking in things. You know, it's true. A minority opinion, like you said. And that's the purpose of doing this roundup. It's to look at these stories we may have missed or not brought enough attention to. So, Tim, thank you for embracing the concept behind the January end of month wrap up. Tim, I wonder what you're going to have to say about this. I have no idea based on that last answer. But trend number three, expansion of right to education cases. Here's a quote from K-12 Dive. While right to education lawsuits have been a constant in the education finance sector, the right to education legal argument is expanding to specific subject areas in the classroom, including literacy and civics education. The right to education is guaranteed under almost every state constitution, and it has so far been used routinely by students and advocacy groups to advocate for equitable education funding. Tim, has this been a big deal in January of 2026, or are we going to have to keep waiting for the rest of the year?
Oh, Jacob, are we teasing what's going on in Kentucky?
There's a chance.
There's a potential. And in fact, hopefully we're going to get a few guests on there. You know what? And what Kentucky's doing is what a lot of states have done. And sadly, what a lot of states have taken to court and already won the point, which is constitutionally a good education is mandated by the Constitution. The best way to, quote, measure that is then the state's contribution to funding that good education. Notice I'm not using lawyer and litigious terms. It's a good education. You know, Wisconsin being one of them, Pennsylvania, the state that I'm in right now, all have successfully sued in asking for and essentially saying the state has not lived up to its required constitutional responsibilities. And even in that phase where they've been vindicated, the funding still has not followed. What I think we're going to see and what I hope we're going to see is more of the depth of which Kentucky is really pushing their effort in getting students involved and really putting on a media facing forward on their topic to say, look, these are issues. And I love one of the things they're pointing out is that the arts in Kentucky take front and center as saying an adequate, well-funded, quality public education has to include the arts. And in Kentucky, that hasn't happened. So I, you know, again, I think this is a trend, and I really hope that when the news of what's going on in Kentucky, and hey, stay tuned, stay downloaded to Busted Pencils, because we definitely want to bring more about what's happening in Kentucky. There's my answer.
Johnny, how about you? Have you seen right to education litigation become a bigger deal in January so far this year, or do you think this is something that might develop longer, or are you not convinced that this is going to be a big deal overall?
Jacob, I actually think it's like just beginning. We're just hitting the tip of the iceberg on this conversation, and this is going to be an increasing trend in 2026 and maybe even further. And it's related to, I think, the first trend that you noted, as well as just what's happening in our country right now. Just for listeners, right? The right to education, right, is basically something that is, you know, built out of human rights or out of children's rights. And, you know, to be a kid in the U.S., right, you have a right to education, ensures free access, non-discriminatory public school, right? And this is at the state level, not the federal constitutional right, but generally it's part of, you know, the state's constitution, Right. And I would say, you know, that's currently under threat due to proposed federal cuts and, you know, chaos in the Department of Education or, you know, design dismantling of that. The state level curriculum stuff we talked about when you, you know, mentioned the, you know, the religious voice and the strength of that regarding curriculum and parents' rights stuff. So you're seeing, you know, even still related to a very increased, discourse or, you know, events related to immigrants in our country. You know, it's a threat to immigrant students' access and initiating, you know, civil rights questions and protections. So I think this is one of those trends in January, Jacob, that's, you know, we're just hitting the tip of a very large iceberg on, right? And just a reminder for our listeners, you know, the U.S. Constitution does not explicitly list education as a fundamental right, but it's typically guaranteed through state constitutions, right? So that's an important thing when we come back around to saying, like, I do think this is a very big issue, especially with regarding, you know, like whether or not our schools are sanctuary spaces, you know, who is allowed or who has access, safe, right? Open access, non-discriminatory schooling. Right, which brings into question the other two trends. So I think this is a big one that ties it all together. And I do think it's going to be something in 2026 we see continue through the months as, you know, a big trend is how are we handling the right to education in the United States? And although constitutionally that's state to state, certainly federal, you know, at the federal level, there is a large, very clear voice on this right now. And that voice is that all children don't matter with regards to their safety in the spaces where they go to learn. That's been made very clear by the federal government. However, it's not our U.S. Constitution that makes decision on this. What's interesting, though, Tim, we'll get into this too probably in future shows, what's interesting related to this specific thing, Jacob, that you ask about, the right to education. We do know that in 1982, the Supreme Court ruled in the Plyler versus Doe case that all children, regardless of immigration status, have the right to a free public education.
Producer Jacob here in the editing suite after the show. Now, you may be thinking that this sounds like a pretty radical development from the Supreme Court back in the 1980s, but here's what George H.W. Bush had to say during the 1980 Republican presidential primary.
Yes, my name is David Grossberg, and I'd like to know, do you think the children of illegal aliens should be allowed to attend Texas public schools free, or do you think that their parents should pay for their education?
I'd like to see something done about the illegal alien problem that would be so sensitive and so understanding about labor needs and human needs that that problem wouldn't come up. But today, if those people are here, I would reluctantly say I think they would get whatever it is that they're, you know, what the society is giving to their neighbors. But the problem has to be solved because we have kind of made illegal some kinds of labor that I'd like to see legal. We're doing two things. We're creating a whole society of really honorable, decent, family-loving people that are in violation of the law. And secondly, we're exacerbating relations with Mexico. The answer to your question is much more fundamental than whether they attend Houston schools, it seems to me. I don't want to see a whole, if they're living here, I don't want to see a whole thing of 6 and 8 year old kids being made, you know, one totally uneducated and made to feel that they're living with outside the law. Let's address ourselves to the fundamentals. These are good people, strong people.
And if you want something a little bit more hard-edged, here's what Ronald Reagan had to say during that same debate.
I think the time has come that the United States and our neighbors, particularly our neighbor to the south, should have a better understanding and a better relationship than we've ever had. And I think that we haven't been sensitive enough to our size and our power. Rather than making them or talking about putting up a fence, why don't we work out some recognition of our mutual problems, make it possible for them to come here legally with a work permit, and then while they're working and earning here, they pay taxes here. And when they want to go back, they can go back and they can cross and open the border both ways.
Anyway, I just thought it would be interesting to hear what Republicans in the 1980s had to say on this issue. Now back to Johnny.
All children, regardless of immigration status, have the right to a free public education. Now, free, of course, you know, that's not like free. It doesn't cost anything. It's generally out of, you know, taxpayer dollars and all kinds of different ways of funded education. Mm-hmm. But we do have legal precedents, you know, at the federal level. However, it's not directly ensured in the U.S. Constitution. However, generally, it is in every state's constitution that all children have access to a non-discriminatory public education, free at the point of access kind of schooling. So I think that's very much being challenged when we're saying, is it safe for kids to go to school? Whether that's because of gun rules and laws, whether that's because of, you know, immigration status and things happening in our country right now. You know, I think we ought to be, and we will be looking closely at the question, do we value a right to education in this country? And if the answer is no, should we, and how are we going to?
Man, I don't know. You know, I want to push, not push. Johnny's absolutely right. What I want to see continuing, and this is, I say, the exciting part about this, there hasn't been some of the movement on, you know, again, these lawsuits. Like I said, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, many other states have, their Supreme Courts have all ruled that it's inadequate, the funding that the state is providing. Why hasn't there been traction? And what I hope to see, and I have this right here, what we have out of Kentucky, when we have this, the students of Kentucky are the ones now filing these lawsuits, even to the point here. Now they're getting active. In fact, this just came out on the 23rd. There was a bill put forward to take away the right to vote for school boards in Fayette and Jefferson counties in Kentucky, and the students of Kentucky now have sued the legislators for putting forward this bill. So here's the hope on this one, to see this pushing. Students, you have the voice. The education that Johnny talks about that is preserved, that is actually constitutionally in each of your states saying you are guaranteed. Hey, if they're not going to listen to the adults, you, the students, have this moment to step up and say, this is about us. This isn't about adults. The Constitution provides us, the children of these states, the right to an education. We're suing. Now, I want to see more of that student involvement.
The United States is a very young country on the scale of the entire world when you look at countries and their histories. But it happens to be one of the oldest standing constitutions in the world, oldest continually used written constitutions. There are good things about that. One of the bad things is that our Constitution was written before universal compulsory education was a big trend in the world, and therefore we're going to need an amendment if we want to get that in there, which I could see that being a pretty good idea. I'm going to keep it here with you, Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, for our fourth and final trend 2026, that being more AI policies and guidance. According to K-12, following the explosion in the development of artificial intelligence across education and countless other sectors in 2025, districts can expect more guidance and policies related to AI tools in 2026, according to education experts. Johnny, we're big fans of AI. Have you been seeing those policies and guidelines actually develop in 2026, or is that still just a hope?
Well, Jacob, we've got a month under our belt in 2026, and I think the trend had begun pretty heavily in 2025, and I don't see it slowing down. I think there's a big need for, you know, developing those policies, and yeah, man, I think this will be a continued trend starting in 2025 and carrying into 2026 and probably even further. But I would say I would anticipate it peaking this year. Because I don't think, whether you're for or against it, the majority is in denial of its presence and how it's changing both how we learn, the work we do in our different industries, and especially related to, you know, being a teacher or being a student. It's AI is a strong part of that at the moment, and that's not changing. And so I do believe we'll see an increased, you know, attention and energy put towards, you know, refining and making sure that those policies aren't just as simple as, are we allowing it or aren't we? Are we going to use it or aren't we going to use it? It's here. It's being used. It's widespread. It's changing faster than we can even deliberate and, you know, draft these policies. So I think, yes, it will be an increase, and it certainly is at a very high level. So I agree with that. I think my response is, you're going to see even more of it this year, and mm-hmm. for good reason. We have to make decisions on how and what we're doing related to, you know, the use of AI as a learner and as a teacher, and probably every industry, you know, listening. We're specific to education, but everyone is going to be, if they're not already grappling with those policies, will be this year.
For sure.
I invite guests on to the Producer's Choice show because I think that they have expertise in the subject matter, which is why I'm reluctant to ask you, Tim. I don't know if you know much about AI or the intersection between it and education, but I'll give you the question anyway, and you can field it as you're capable. Do you think that there have been more AI policies and guidance so far in 2026?
Whether there are more policies and guidance, I don't know. What I can see now is absolutely what Johnny said, the need for policies to evolve very quickly away from particularly the can or can't use it types of policies that seem to, particularly in education, that seem to be the first types of policies, or when and when you cannot use it and things like that. I think that's great guidance, but that there needs to really be a push for policies with guidance recommendations and a realization that these policies, though, are going to be fluid. They're going to need to change rapidly and quickly. And so if you're a leader in a position right now wondering, boy, should I update our AI policy we put forth in November 2022 when ChatGPT was released? Yes, you should update that policy. More importantly, too, bring people to the table that understand that the update and the need for these policies is not to bring forth a discussion about whether or not you're going to use it. The policies now have to envelop the whole sense of what does it mean now to be a society in which AI continues to show up in ways that some of us aren't even aware of, and understanding that there are people currently right now who are prolific, proficient users, and there are some people still who have not even touched, and understand that, man, it's beyond here. It's time. So there has to be a push for true policies that are grounded in a reality that understands that AI is part of here and now, and it is going to continue to evolve, and policies need to have language that allows for an evolution of those policies.
Tim, I don't like the way you were looking at Johnny and I when you said that some of us are AI expert geniuses while others are ignorant rubes. I felt that. I saw what you were doing and it hurt my feelings, but we'll address it on the next Producer's Choice show. Tim, Johnny, thank you so much for coming on your own show. It's always a pleasure to have you. And before I can release you for recess, there's one last thing I have to do.
Let's go!
We're going to start with Dr. Tim Slecker. Tim, 60 seconds. Give me one encouraging and one troubling trend you've noticed in education so far this year.
Whoa. I'm going to say that it's related to the same thing. It's troubling and encouraging. The push, the continued push for the science of reading, and now seeing more schools and more teachers pushing back against the mandates in the science of reading, largely from the standpoint of acknowledging truth, which is kids, when it comes to being taught to read, need a whole variety of opportunities, and teachers need a full toolkit that always allows for phonics, books, reading, all of those things, and the emerging literacies. So it's a very interesting time right now, because particularly now as the Mississippi Miracle continues to now be revealed as largely test score gains that were largely put forth by holding back third graders and retesting them, and then acknowledging now that those third graders from years gone by who are now in eighth grade, that their reading scores didn't continue to grow in eighth grade. Science of reading did not produce a miracle. Phonics in the science of reading has been great for a lot of kids, but it has also hindered a lot of the continued development of kids who were already reading. So there you go.
Tim, thank you for your 134-second answer to the 60-second question. Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, 60 seconds. Give me one encouraging and one troubling trend that you've noticed in education so far in January of 2026.
Oh, Jacob, I'll do it quickly, and then we could probably make a whole show of this, and it will probably be something that we talk about with educators around the country. But, you know, my optimistic one is that anytime, you know, in at least in my entire teaching career, where there's been, you know, just cause for civil unrest in our country, it's not just only this particular political moment, but, you know, my teachers taught about the civil rights movement. You know, we had many different eras of whether we call it protest or civil unrest. You know, we taught about it. And so schools and youth voice is a big part of speaking truth to power and where our country is right now. And so my optimism in January is that there are a lot of school boards and school community leaders, principals, superintendents who are listening to students and who are, you know, I think really doing a good job of saying, hey, you aren't happy with the way things are in this country right now, and we want to help you voice that in a really healthy way to practice democracy. So I see that as an increasing trend of optimism. Great job, school leaders and teachers out there, listening to the students who are concerned in your school and in your community, and not just telling them to be quiet, sit down and learn to read or learn more of their math. Like, they care about the world they're in and that they will be the leaders of. And so their voice matters. So giving them a healthy platform to be democratic citizens is my optimism. Related is my, you know, my other trend that I think is the fact that they have to still be, you know, going at this. And so I worry about, you know, are all of our students safe? Do they have a right to an education? And how will their voices be heard given the current context of where we're at as a country? And so, you know, I think that's a double-edged sword right now. It's absolutely important. So ever more important that you school leaders, teachers, and people in the community, you know, listen to young people and help guide them to be generative and productive with their voice. All right. That's it.
Good answer, Johnny. Good answer, Tim. Special thanks to K-12 Dive for providing us with these four trends to keep an eye out for. We will continue to keep an eye on these stories as they develop throughout the year. Shout out to all of our educators and administrators out there. And now I will hand the show over to my favorite educator, Dr. Tim Schlecker.
Well, Jacob, now it's time for your moment of zen. In a system of intimidation and control, people do not show how much they know, how deeply they feel, until their practical sense informs them they can do so without being destroyed.
Hey there, Pencil Busters. This is producer Jacob, and thank you for listening to the Producer's Choice Show. If you enjoyed this show, check out all the Busted Pencils programs, starting out Monday with Homeroom, Wednesday with Class in Session, and of course, you can always find us every Saturday across the Civic Media Network for 1 hour of your favorite blue-collar scholars, Tim, Johnny, and Jacob, and keep busting pencils.